Just a couple more weeks, right? Just 2 more weeks? 2.5?
Yes.
Three
oh, no.
weeks? Something it's like that.
Wow.
Very soon.
Whoa. Yeah.
Very soon, we're going to meet up near Boston for a live recording for Making It 500. We have a call right after this recording, actually, to go over details and stuff. So maybe next week we'll actually have some specific details to share. But if you haven't gotten your free ticket to come to that event and hang out with a bunch of people in a place, you should do that. The link is going to be in the show notes for the, it's like an Eventbrite free ticket thing. Just go sign up so we know how many people. Last I heard, which was a few weeks ago, there were like 250-something people.
That's good. We're going to have a good party.
Yeah, it's going to be a good time. It's it's 11 to 5 was the final time that I heard. So it's an afternoon on a Saturday. Yeah, it's going to be a very good time. Lots of stuff going on there. So we would love to see you. Come hang out with us if you want to. And we're all going to be there. All three of us promised.
All three of us.
All three of us promised to make the trip and be there in person.
I'll send you guys a case of anxiety medication, both of you. We're scoring great for me for years.
Great. Yeah. Well, what have you guys been up to?
I just, when we were talking a second ago, I said I ripped up the floor in the house and you said another one? Because I guess I did talk about it last week. No, I'm working on the floor for the house. This past weekend was the Rat Rod show, which went really well. It was fun.
Oh, yeah. The the videos, like I could tell how excited you were to have that car out driving and like showing it off. That was awesome.
Yeah.
That was cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't show too much social media stuff. I show some more stuff on my Patreon, but I'm working on the video now. So it was right after our show last week. So the Rat Rod was last weekend and the show starts filling up and I don't know how many cars. Maybe there's enough room in there for like 400 cars. I don't know. It's a big giant field. And I wanted a prominent spot. And so I went over there and the car wasn't quite ready. I don't have a rearview mirror on the side. And there's a couple of other things with the exhaust I wanted to tweak. And I went over there and the place was filling up. It's just 4 miles up the road. So I just drove through to check and I bumped into my buddy Don, and Don goes, "You better get over here. You're going to lose your spot." And so as I turned around and left, and then I got a call from the show organizer. He's like, "Hey, if you want to get over here, you better get over here now." So I ran back and Mike is helping me do stuff in the barn, Mike the fireman. So I was like, "Mike, let's do a die. Let's go." He goes, "Let's do it." And he's going to be my follow car in case I break down on the road. And I started it up and drove it. And it was really the first time I ever drove it on the road. It is the first time I ever drove it outside the property. I drove it around the property and I wasn't able to get out of second gear. Had no idea if third gear worked. As soon as I got on the road, it's a little noisy because the muffler isn't on it. But it, the type of engine, it isn't super loud. It's not like a V8 with headers. It's just rumbly. It just sounds like a truck. And it drove great. And the steering, I took the steering wheel off and put it back on. So it's at like 10 o'clock. It should be at 12 o'clock. So I just need to adjust that. So driving, you think you got to like kind of do like an old bus where you're constantly adjusting it just a little bit, not as much as I expected. Shifted cool. through all the gears. Great. Stopped really good. Didn't go over 40. One of the wheels is bent. So it would cause a little vibration if I went too fast. The rim is bent and I can't find that rim. It's a specific size for that truck. And I got to the show, I got a spot and I was parked all weekend. And then I left on Sunday afternoon, drove home and the show was great. It was great. A lot of people curious, what kind of car is this? Like, is this, I didn't know Cadillac made a Woody. I'm like, well, let me show you a picture. So I put a picture on the window showing that the car was originally derelict and completely abandoned. And it was fun. It was nice talking to a lot of like-minded guys. A lot of old-timers in that world. There's not too many young guys doing it. Mostly everybody you speak to is in their 70s or older. There's a lot of old-school car guys. It's not a young man's thing, at least it seems. There's younger guys, but for the most part, anybody young was my age or older. It's crazy. And anyway, remember I told you guys before the show started about something that I didn't know if it was real or not?
Yeah.
I just got an answer back from that person.
Oh, man.
It just said, "Thanks for reaching out. Mark has already contacted us."
Dang.
Exciting.
That's cool.
Exciting news. I'll tell you guys next week if something happens. It just popped up.
And feel free to drop my name in there if they're looking for more people. Like,
Yeah. This freelance world is a roller coaster. It's kind of what we're going to talk a little bit about today. But in general, the show went great. It was a lot of fun. It was really cool. It was nice to be able to get out there. And I'll talk a little bit about like moving energy and shaking things up. And that's really what I felt like I did with this car, by getting it out of the driveway. Typically, I like all antique cars. I get them, I fix them, and I work on them, and then I never use them. So when I do get to use them and drive them locally, it is fun. And it is, there's a certain exhilarating feeling getting out there on the road and being like, is this it? Am I going to crash? Is it going to stay stable? Is it going to work? Anytime you drive an old car, it's a real pain in the ass. I don't care who you are. If the car could be in perfect condition, you take it out, there's always something could possibly go wrong. That's why I love brand new cars too. But it was fun. It was really fun. And I'm editing
David,
up that
muted.
Video.
What did you say?
What's that?
David said something, but he's muted.
Oh, good day.
Oh, no. No microphone.
Uh-oh.
Check your phantom power.
Uh-oh. All right.
No.
Not yet.
No.
I'm saying it was so insignificant.
Oh. There it is.
Gotcha. The thing I was saying was so insignificant. So we made up. Now it's a huge, huge deal. There's a. I'll get to what I said here in a second, but there's a Mitch Hedberg joke. Brian Prusa knows what I'm talking about, but I don't remember it exactly. But he's like, he's saying something to a friend, and the friend doesn't hear, and he says it again, and the friend doesn't hear, and then he's like, one more time. He's like, it's really insignificant. I was just saying that tree is really far away, and it turns into a big deal. All I was saying was, anytime I took the Impala out, it was anxiety, because I was stranded with that car twice, and you just think like, ugh, I'm just going to be left somewhere every time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I felt that way with the Green Cruiser. I mean, for a while, but then eventually you stabilize it. You know, the quirks, you know, like I can't go too fast downhill or uphill or turn when I'm whatever, you know, you learn the thing. So
that was funny, because as I'm coming to the show, there's a little hill to get up into the show space. So I came off my main road and I made the turn, and now it's uphill. And now this truck Cadillac Woody, I've never went uphill, and all of a sudden it just bogged completely down. I had a quick, before I saw that, a quick shift into first gear. On the move, I had to go into first gear and then gas it to get up that hill. But that's just the quirks you begin to learn about these cars and these old engines. But solid, didn't blow any hoses. I was waiting for that big puff of like steam to come out of the hood, because I would have blown a gasket or something. But no, it was great. And the show went really well, and it was fun, and got to see some really great inspiration for, I'm anxious to build another car. This I'm going to keep working on. There's a lot to do. I'm working up the edit right now. I think episode 5 will be out this weekend. I also did my CSS speakers. The work is done. Now I just need to set up and do my beauty shots. And so that's going to come. That'll be another video. So this weekend or next weekend.
Is that a sponsored video?
No, they just gave me the kit. It's not really a pay job, but the kit is expensive. So the kit is really beautiful. It's really nice. And it's great. It gives you a lot of latitude as an artist. You get MDF boxes and you can do whatever you want to them. And I'm mentally preparing to start doing the porch poles, which I started the beginning of the summer. I had the wood drying all summer, and I'm going to bring those into the shop and start lathing. Is that a word? I know I said that. People make fun of me for saying lathing.
Turning.
It is because you've said it.
I'm going to start lathing up the porch poles. So that's something I'm mentally preparing for. But I did rip out the floor of the house. It's the second floor that I had to rip out. Maybe the only one I have to level. The only one left to level. The second floor is crooked as hell, but I'm just going to leave it that way. And so that's it. So I'm building back. The mental hurdles that I had to overcome to do the first floor renovation are all in place. So they're all figured out. So this floor replacement's going much quicker. I have to make 17 beams. So there's going to be 17 beams to span the whole room. And each one of them lives in a pocket on either side of the room. So there's a big sill on either side, eight inch sill on each side. And I have to put pockets every 16 inches. The last time we hand chiseled almost every one of them with a little bit of a buzz saw, with a vibrating saw. What do they call it? The cut all thing. The zzzz.
We call them a zerp zerp.
The zerp zerp. With the zerp zerp, the chisel and the mallet, we were able to do all those pockets. I had a little brainstorm yesterday. I was like, why don't I just put a template there and flush router cut them? And so that's what I've been doing. I could send you guys a picture. And so I made about 5 of them yesterday in about an hour, where it would have taken me like 20 minutes for each pocket. So I'm going to, it's pouring rain out today. As soon as we're done with our meeting, I'm going to go over there and I'm going to route pockets. I already ordered the beams, a special order, because they were 14 feet long. When the beams come in, I'll just have to cut them and chop them and drop them right in. So that's what I'm doing. So that's what I've been working on.
Cool.
That's what I've been working on.
That's all, huh?
Trying to shake things up.
that's a
haven't
light
done
payload.
Much of this work. Just this last week, just, you know, porch poles and a house and a car and speakers and a. You make me feel so lazy.
Yeah, and make sure you don't call it a Sawzall if you're doing an ad for DeWalt.
No.
Did you get that note?
many years ago. Yeah.
Oh.
Many years ago. So what happened was. DeWalt sent some of their battery powered tools over. This was like maybe 8 years ago. And I did a video and I said, Sawzall. And it went through, it got approved, it went up live. And then the agency came back and like, we got to take the video down immediately. Sawzall is it's a Milwaukee thing. Yeah. I'm like, oh, okay.
What is it called? The reciprocating saw?
Yeah.
Oh, that's such a boring name.
I know. Sounds too technical.
That's what we call it, a Zerp Zerp. It's brand agnostic. Cool.
Oh, David, it's Phantom Power's out again.
Phantom Power.
How about you get some real power instead of the Phantom?
I don't know what's going on, guys. It's got a mind of its own. Jimmy just sent the photos over of the floor, and that just looks like a ton of work.
It is. I'll send you a video of me moving one of the 200-pound beams.
You know, it's funny. Like, I recognize that you're there, and so you know the house, and you know the differences. But honestly, every picture of that house that you've ever sent to me looks about the same. Because it's like broken up floors, old wood, missing this wall, missing that floor. Like, I, you know,
yes.
It could be the same photo over and over.
Exactly. So, by the way, I'm sending just you guys this little video of me moving the beam because I sent it to Derek. But that beam was about 150 feet away from the house, and I dragged it over there. So I got it in the basement, and then I turned the camera on. I figured it would be boring watching me drag a beam across the grass.
I don't know.
Well, David, what have you been up to?
So I still working on the cassette. That one's going to take me a while just because I'm kind of taking my time, but I am making progress with it. But yesterday we started a different project, and I've always been fascinated with Hamm's beer signs. Even as a kid, there was this restaurant that we would go to, and there would be this Hamm's beer advertisement sign hanging on the wall, and it had like a moving waterfall behind it. And as a kid, it was just like mesmerizing. And I've always wanted to recreate that. And I started looking on eBay a few weeks ago for Hamm's beer signs, and even the small, they go for crazy amounts of money. And so, but I did find this one, and this is only like 13, 14 inches wide, 12 inches tall. This was $300. And I'm sorry for the people who can't see, but it looks like a mid-century house with a...
You know what it looks like? It looks like a before for dead motels.
Yes.
Follow that account?
That's perfect. Yeah.
Well, that's the before. Now after, it'll be covered with graffiti and the sign will be gone.
So I am recreating this, but I'm going to replace the photo with a photo that I took and then the little sign with the... I'm going to come up with, you know, some little catchy phrase like, relax. But maybe something better.
Nice.
So I'm recreating this out of wood, but way bigger and way better. And I'm using this sign that I spent way too much money for as the inspiration. And then when I'm done, I'm going to sell the Hamm's beer sign and then hang the one that I made up in the house. So, And I was talking to Bob about, so in the, there's a chimney running through this sign here. And basically it's this. The one I purchased, it's all plastic. And the chimney that I want to make, I want to do like a 3D texture. And so I'm trying to figure out how to scan our current chimney that has like a fake rock facade type thing on it, and I want to get that texture and 3D print that and put that over mine. So I was asking Bob for some guidance on that.
So do you want like your brick or just you want brick?
I think it's a cooler video if I scan my brick.
Gotcha.
And because I know I went on Etsy, like you mentioned a few weeks ago, I went on Etsy and I found 3D textures and I actually bought one for $10 of a brick texture. So if everything fails, I have this mesh. I don't know what I'm talking about, but some sort of 3D mesh that I can bring into Fusion. I'll use that as my backup. But I have an app on my phone called Polycam, and I think I can scan the texture and somehow bring that into Fusion and then just print out little skins that I could glue onto this piece that I'm making.
Cool.
So, and then, what I forgot to mention is the photo part here. I am printing my photo on transparency and then backlighting it. And then the little sign cool. here is also going to be backlit. So it will need to be powered, but And it's totally my style with the mid-century modern or the mid-century house on there.
Really, it's beautiful. It'd be nice to take that little model and turn it into a real home. Now that you guys are working on
yeah.
concept.
And when you look at it, it makes no sense at all because it's the outline of a house, but then there's a photo of a lake in the middle of it. Right. And then these massive fake leaves.
Are those
huge
skis?
Leaves.
Yeah. So we'll see. I'm going to have some fun with that one.
That's cool. Just to the texture thing. So the reason I was asking if you want to do yours is because there's another way to do it that you could, I don't know. If you know Blender, you could do a texture map. Do you guys know what a texture map is?
Not
kind of.
Really.
Okay, so you have in 3D modeling, you have image mapping and texture mapping, and there's UV mapping. There's a bunch of other stuff, but these are two big ones. So the image map would be where if you made a sphere, and then you took an image and you wrapped that image around the sphere, you know, it mm-hmm. would be covering the outside of it. And if you just had an image of brick with its texture built into the flat image and you did an image map around that and printed out that sphere, it would still be a smooth sphere because it's just the image. A texture map takes the, I believe it's the values of the image. So you could have a black and white image and it will create an actual mesh texture on the object using the values. So if you have dark for low, light colors for high, it will create that as a physical texture. And if you applied that and then printed that out, you wouldn't typically use that for printing, but you could. It's more for lighting. So if you were to, in a video game, if you had something that had a texture map on it and then you shine a light around it, it's going to be able to create realistic shadows and highlights and stuff based on the air quote physical texture that is applied there. So
in my research yesterday, I didn't do a deep dive. I just kind of skimmed the surface, but it looks like Fusion just recently added texture through black and white images.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah.
So in theory, if I can take a photo of the brick, convert that to a grayscale image, and then bring that into Fusion, I should be able to do that.
I totally forgot about that. Yeah, they did add that recently. You should do that because I would like to see if it works. You know, it's a good use case for it.
there's a certain threshold of like I like a little bit of new in each video to push me a little bit further. But when there's too much new and I don't know, and there's deadlines and I don't know how long it's going to take me to do something, the anxiety kicks in a little bit. You know, it needs to be just a little push, not too much of a push,
right? But the cool thing is, like with a digital experiment like that, that's not a lot of effort and material and stuff like that to see if it works.
Obviously, you don't understand how my brain works. Little barriers are huge barriers.
Sorry. Fair enough. Speaking of big things that you've never done before, I've started doing fiberglass this week.
Oh, how did that go?
Well,
Well,
I mean,
come on.
It's all right, I guess. Okay, so I realized about halfway through doing this fiberglass thing that the reason that it's hard or that I don't quite understand it is that there's basically no order to it. It's
very free flowing.
It is so free.
You got to lay on the biggest, broadest pieces in the flattest area first.
Okay.
And then you got to cut the pieces smaller for the curves.
Okay. Well, I guess I was on the right track then.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just like you start with, I'm going to put this stuff on and then I'm going to lay this thing over it. And then it's just like everything stuck together and you're blah. And
it's on your fingers. It's in your nose. It's on your phone. That's why
it goes from like okay to just ridiculous mess in seconds. It's crazy.
Yes. It's you got to be very ordered. And when I did the roof of the Cadillac, which there's an Instagram video on where you could see how I was doing it extremely orderly. And then it was taking me hours. And by the time I got to the other side, I was getting a little sloppy. So if you look up inside the roof, there's no drips on one half of where I started because I was being very cautious. By the time I was like, I got to get done. It's getting late. And so I was being a little bit more sloppy and then it's dripping through the roof. But that's it. You just got to go. You got to be very measured. Keep gloves and baby powder nearby. And
baby powder. I forgot about that. Try not
to answer your phone. It's all of a sudden. Yeah. It's in the buttons. It's everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I got it done. Like it did what it was supposed to do, which is progress. Because the time that I tried it before, it was a disaster and just was like, I think I threw the thing away. I don't even remember. And this one, I got it done. It took multiple stages because I had to do one side and flip the whole thing over the next day and do the other side. And so,
you could palm sand, even though what you're working on is a foam. I don't know if we talked about exactly what it is, but it's a foam prop. Any bubbles that show up, you sand them off and you don't necessarily have to put a patch right back in that bubble because the structure, the overall structure, the strength you're going for is that exoskeleton is basically all there. If there's a couple bubbles, you sand the bubbles out, then that's when you use either joint compound or Bondo or something to fill in those spots.
Gotcha.
You know, like I said in our conversation, you said you could use joint compound. Like I'm like, typically for like a non-involved prop, a prop that's in the background, like a bookshelf or something. But if you're going to be handling it in objects and in videos and you're going to be picking it up and you're going to be using it to lever other things, I would hate to see you in the final act snap it in half because you really weren't judging the weight of it. But if you fiberglass it, you could, you know, with enough fiberglass, you could pick up another person with the other end of that thing.
Yeah.
And it'll be durable. If it gets knocked over in the wind, it's not going to get a big dent in it as easily. So that's why I think it's smart to go with that route. And that prop will last. It won't be one of those things that like, oh, you snapped off one of the things. You're like, what do I do now? Do I fix it or just throw it away?
Yay, it's going to last. So I haven't talked about what this thing is. Yeah. It'll be funnier for the video, but it's not really something I need to keep around for a real long time.
But it is the type of thing you can give to a fan or a friend and they would cherish it.
Yeah. It's like you hang it on the ceiling and it's just a weird thing for people to look at when they come in the shop. That's one of
instead
those.
Of a boat hanging in your dining room, you hang one of those and people what's going on here?
In the dining room. There we go. I'll just convince Jenny of that. That'll be great.
So you can be messy, and as long as everything dries, all your strings and drips, they all get sanded off later. And you just got to be careful. This is one thing you really got to be careful of, is those tiny little strings turn into needles if you haven't already been punctured. Oh, be careful. If you're already done, you're done. But as you work with fiberglass, where the fiberglass mesh ends and all the little fur sticks out and it gets wet, and then you go to do something later and you can get a splinter and they're impossible to see.
I had one this morning and it just stuck straight out. I mean, and it's like one fiber. It's so crazy. Yeah. But I got it done and it was really for strength, not for finish. You know, so there will be a little bit of sanding, but I really don't care that much about the surface finish of this thing. Mm-hmm. So, and I did like, it's hard to explain without knowing what the thing is, but I did the big broad sections and I used a thin mesh and I don't know about the meshes. And this was a question I had for you actually, because I ordered a whole bunch, not a whole bunch, but a long roll of a really fine, thin mesh. It was like the lowest number I could get.
Mm-hmm.
Thinking that that would be
curves easy.
Okay. Yeah. So, but then I had these rolls of a 2-inch by like 20-foot, a roll of stuff that was thicker mesh. Like there's more material to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't really think about the fact that they were different. So I put the first stuff down, and when it lays in the resin, it just disappears. And I'm like, cool, I know that's supposed to happen. Okay, it disappears, you can't see it, then that's a good thing. And then I get this roll stuff that's thicker, and I go to put it on.
Takes a lot more to
slather it. And it's soaked, but it doesn't disappear. It
looks like a skin graft.
Yeah. So why is, like, what is the purpose of having those two different ones?
That would be for like a boat or a Corvette or something, a fiberglass structure where you want to build up body inside joints, fillets and stuff like that. So where you would want like a bigger fillet. Like actually, Jackman made a couple things and he used that tape perfectly. Like if you look inside of the video of his boot, I don't even know if he published it yet, but I saw some of his online pictures of it. The boot that he made for our go-kart event, wherever there's joints inside, in his camper too, he always has like a tape on the inside where the joints are. It gives you more structure. So the thin stuff goes on the presentation side and those go on the inside, typically.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, I used it on my cowboy boot. I used it on the top ridge because I figured that would get a lot of beat up. So just it's where you can carry more epoxy in the tape. So it gives it more strength.
Okay, really, that's good. Really, well, the way I used it was around the weird shaped parts that are kind of weak.
So you can do that too if you're just willing to just use some fairing compound or some body filler just to feather it into the rest of the thing.
Cool. Okay. Well, I guess maybe I wasn't as far off as I expected to be.
Yeah, that's fine.
Well, I fought with that for a few days and it turned out better than I expected. I mean, the entire process was messy and feels wasteful.
You just
got
to like succumb to the dirty process.
Yeah. Yeah, I wore, like, I dedicated clothes to that for a couple of days. So I didn't care if I got it all over my shirts and stuff. But, yeah, so I've been working on that and then working on other future projects, kind of planning things, working on some electronics and some coding for other stuff coming up. But, oh, I got the cruiser back yesterday.
Oh, what do you say?
Cruiser back again. And so he replaced the fuel filter. He said he cut open the old fuel filter, which probably was the original one, now that I'm thinking about it. Well, from me, as long as I've had it. And he said it was just like somebody had mixed mud and coffee and then poured it in the filter. He said it was just like black and brown goo and chunks of stuff. And so I think that was the big problem.
Sometimes it's the simplest things we figure.
Yeah. And he ran it for multiple days. Heated it up and cooled it down looking for an oil leak because I had seen some oil on the bottom of it, just like a couple of drops. I'm like, rebuilt engine should not have an oil leak. And he cleaned that off and then he ran it for several days. That's why he had it so long, apparently, and could not recreate an oil leak. So he thinks that whatever I was seeing, and he saw it too, but whatever it was like leftover stuff from them putting the whole thing together, I guess. And it had just heated up somewhere high and run down and kind of collected in that spot. So we're going to keep an eye on it, but there's no oil leak, which is good, and there's no other problems. So I think it's good. I'm glad to have it back. And I got it back yesterday morning, drove it a lot yesterday, and no problems at all. It actually, with the fuel filter swapped, it starts up a little bit faster, runs a little bit smoother, you know, so I think that was probably an issue for sure.
Did you see the, I sent to our chat on Instagram? Some guy has, I don't understand why, it was late last night when I sent it. This guy has two brand new cars, exactly like the one you're talking about.
No.
Brand new 2025, but made to look exactly like yours.
What?
Yeah. I don't know why. They're made in Europe, apparently. They still make this car. They still make them.
I've absolutely been bombarded with messages on people wanting to...
Oh, yeah. So that one, they don't sell in the U.S. Yeah.
Yeah. That's your car, right? It's the same exact one.
It's similar. It's a later or a newer version of an earlier version.
But it's, I don't know. But he says they take them and modify them and then they use them in a coal mine or something. I don't know. It makes
sense. Oh, crazy.
What the hell it is.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Anyway, so I've been working on that and planning future stuff and, it's kind of weird. I'm doing work, and I think I've talked about this for a while on and off, but I'm doing work. I try to be productive every day, but I feel a lot less pressure to get things done every day. And I'm not sure if that's good or bad. I think it's good from one perspective because, like, enjoy my time and I use my time more for things that I wouldn't if I was hustling all the time. But at the same time, if I'm less productive, I'm less productive. And so less comes out of that from like a financial perspective and from a moving things forward perspective. But I found that I really like the slower pace and not feeling like I have to do.
I think it comes with age and experience too. And having confidence. You know, when we're younger, we're always like scrambling around. There's still always that dread that everything's going to go horribly wrong, but it's less. The hum gets a little quieter.
Yeah. I've definitely felt that lately. You know, like I get to the end of the day and I'm like, man, all I did was one coat of fiberglass on that thing. Huh. And I feel like I should have done more, but then I'm like,
it's okay.
Yeah, but then I like swam and I went to my kid's soccer game and So been kind of in that where I'm like being productive but then not, and wrestling with whether I'm okay with that.
So summertime too, you know, you give yourself a break.
That's true.
I haven't put a video out in 2 weeks and I'm like, nobody's paying attention, nobody cares. The people that care are following on Instagram, they talk to me every day. That's all nice. Nobody cares.
Well, so we kind of had like a topic around similar to that in that, you know, things, there's a lot of stuff around this that's out of our control. I think timing and productivity is in our control. But lately, for the last, I don't know, year or two, I've been choosing how to spend my time in a different way than I have in the past. And for better or worse, I just think that's what I should be doing right now, is changing how I'm spending my time. But there's also stuff that like we can't control around our businesses and around YouTube stuff, and advertising stuff. And I don't know. I think we should maybe talk about choosing when to choose to work and when to choose to not to, or to pivot, or I don't know. There's something around making choices. I think.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because here I am. I was excited. I talked a little bit about it in the after show. I never really gave details because I don't want to out my potential client or my client, but I was going to be involved in this exciting thing. And they got me involved in the ad agency and everything. It was all exciting. And then it just got dropped. So now suddenly I'm left with this vacuum of where for the thousandth time I was involved with an interesting idea that didn't go. And that's what happens. It's life in show business, right? Things get kicked up. Everyone gets excited. And then someone goes, we don't have the money for that. What are you thinking? You know, like some adult in the room. And then everyone's like, we got to stop. And then they got to send me a note that says, we're really sorry. We'll keep you in mind for the next one. And that's what happened a couple weeks ago. And I was really bummed out. But now I'm left with this time. And how do I use my leftover time productively to either dig back into the house, which is what I've done, because also the car is done for the most part. It's not totally done, but it's the hard part's done. And I could see the end of the tunnel with the car. So now I can free my time up instead of jamming every day on it and just forgetting about everything and hoping that other project will just work itself out, which it didn't. It's important to really refocus and look around and say, okay, now that my trip has been canceled, how am I going to use my time productively? How can I spend some time cutting some leather bags? I mean, this is always in the back of my mind. Let me cut some leather bags and make a bunch of leather bags and start kicking the energy up in the leather business. Or let me, you know what? Rob's making a bunch of ice picks right now because stock has been low. A few people said, hey, I don't see the ice picks in the store. They're there. Some reason, it says right in the store, there's 50 ice picks left. But I'll get a phone call. It's like, hey, there's no ice picks left. I'm like, I'm looking at it now. They're there. Are you on the right website? Happens every day. So just moving some energy around when you think something's going to happen and then it's not happening and you're left with this vacuum. It's really important to use that time productively. Otherwise, especially in show business, you could really sink and start floundering and feeling like, am I worthless? Is this project not going because something I did or said? Or these are all the things that happen when you're in this so-called entertainment business. But we're in a weird business where it's entertainment, but we also have to make our own way and we have to develop our own projects and we have to develop our projects with or without an advertiser. You know, you have some big projects on the horizon you want to place advertisers with them, both you guys. Sometimes it doesn't work and you just got to go for it anyway because you want to make that project happen. I don't really have any big advertisers on the car. I mean, Typebond and Total Boat, I mean, those guys are always there, which is great. And I'm really happy to be able to, I mean, what a better project to show off than making a car out of wood, you know, for both of those products. And also welding, Lincoln Welding. But sometimes you have like a big overarching, like a, I don't, but you see like Colin has like some video game project to make some crazy backyard armament weapon. You know, I don't have any of those big overarching things, but it's important to really focus and develop your own projects, even if they're pointless, to keep moving. That's, you know, pointless in the way that you might not be able to make money from it. But what is interesting is, you know, I built this car from basically brought a car back to life. And now this client, this exciting client, which I have no idea where it's going to go. It could also be another throw it on the scrap heap of time. This one thing that I got the email in the beginning of this episode is another car. It's a car endorsement, which would be fantastic if it really comes through. Who knows if somebody there saw this project of me making a car out of nothing and said, this would be a good fit. This guy's got four wheels. He likes being creative. He has outdoorsy lifestyle. Let's see if this is a good fit for him. And who knows? But you'll never know the answer. Sometimes you're sitting in a meeting like, I love that video you did, which is why we called you. But sometimes you don't know. But it's important to keep moving the energy around and start working on another project. If something goes south and, you know, if the funds are low, it's important to just keep moving and come up with something else. That's why I got into the house a couple weeks ago. It's like, I haven't been here in months. I kind of have some mental hurdles I have to get past. I'm like, this floor has got to go. Even though I wish I could save it, it's got to go. If I'm doing it right, it's got to go. I got to do it right. And so I ripped the whole floor out in one day. And now putting the old one back is easy because I've been through the pain and suffering of the not knowing. Now I know. But that's where I'm at. That's a little bit of me convincing myself out loud that everything's going to be okay.
I think it comes down to like being proactive and deciding about the things that you can do to prepare for whatever's next, even if you don't know what's next, right?
Right.
Like, can you set up? What can you start to plan? What can you do today to make tomorrow better? And what can you do tomorrow to make the next week you know, easier or more productive? Or
and in my world of freelance, I mean, we're all freelancers, but my whole life has been a freelancer. It's really important too. When you see a desert ahead of you, it's important to tell a lot of people like, hey, I have some free time. Do you want to visit that project we talked about 4 years ago? Just letting you know. And no, that project's no longer. And I'm like, no problem. You know, when this, you guys know the client that dumped this project, I went to their main competitor last week and sent an email and said, hey, I'm available if you guys want to do anything. Remember that old idea we talked about 2 years ago? This very similar idea. Even though I got no response, I felt good sending that email. I was like, hey, I got time. Nobody knows the backstory. But when that other client sees that email, they're like, oh yeah, we have something going that didn't go anywhere with this guy. At least someone's talking about me now. They haven't talked to me that they're talking about me, but somebody read that email. At that other company, and it's like, you know what? Even though that project is dead, this is another deaded project that was 2 years ago. I found the PowerPoint. The person who wrote the PowerPoint at the ad agency, I was like, hey, remember this idea that didn't go anywhere? I'm available if you guys need any other ideas like this. So I wouldn't have done that if this other new, I wish I could talk in realities, but I don't want to get in trouble. This project that just got deaded, if that didn't get deaded, I wouldn't have made contact with that other one. And like I said, I just literally just like, what do you, when you blow on those things and they, those wishy poo things, the little wishy puffs, what are they called?
What? Hello? What? A dandelion?
Yes. When you blow on.
Well, now I have to change the title to wishy puffs. Come on, man.
When you blow on a wishy puff and those things fly away, that's basically what I did. I just like blew on a wishy puff and.
So weird.
By sending that email to the competitor.
Can you trademark wishy puffs or whatever you need to do to own that and the rights to that? One of
the problems with my business and the nature of what I do, and probably what you guys do, is the dynamic of everything is amazing, or every, or this project is amazing, or this project is total crap. And it's hard to have a middle ground. And the way my brain works is, not only does YouTube, every YouTube video is either very good or very bad, never in the middle, but my brain also amplifies that. Everything is very good or very bad. So there's like this emotional ups and downs. And I need to figure out how I can level that out a little bit more. And just to smooth it out. And I think it's also a self-training thing. Just like, okay, not everything is great. Not everything is bad. But I also find myself getting stuck in my old ways. And I'm trying to train myself to be open a little bit more. So for, you know, the last 8 years, I've always said no to any kind of commission. Always. It's like, nope, I don't take commissions. I just make stuff for myself and I make videos on that. That's how I make money. And that was like a solid, there's no middle ground in that. Or there's no, and so I've been rethinking this a little bit. I think it would be cool, not only to push myself, but also for the channel, is to work on something that has nothing to do with me, to make stuff for other people. And
you know, so that's a really good point. I like working on stuff for other people because it's a whole new set of problem solves that you wouldn't otherwise. And it just makes you more skillful when you solve problems for other people's headaches.
100%. And everything that I live and breathe every day of creating and making stuff. It is all I think about all the time. And I think to push myself further, I need to execute on other people's ideas a little bit just to get outside of my own head. And so I had this idea, and I wasn't going to mention it, but I'm going to mention it. But I had this idea of going around town and trying to find the addresses of, and you can tell me if this is a stupid idea, but trying to find the addresses of like the most wealthy people in Toledo who have the coolest houses, very modern, coolest houses, and then put together a package and send it to this house and saying, hey, I am a woodworker, an artist. I want to make something for your house, inside or out, sculpture, furniture, something you can't buy, something that's completely out of the ordinary. All you have to do is pay for materials. And that's it. I will
that's
make
it.
The
it's
thing.
It's like the long guy. It's like the long guy.
Yeah. Yes, it's like that.
It's great. It's a great idea. Yeah. And you can also hit up interior designers too, like high-end interior designers, because then they'd have access to those people.
Because that's also a really good idea. And so the thought is, it's like, okay, and you also understand that I make videos for a living, so will you give access to your house for the installation? Because that's the big payoff in the video, is seeing the piece. And so that's what we're working on. I'm trying to work on this package.
Idea.
Of sending to basically rich people in the area and try
to. I think it's a great idea because you get a couple of good opportunities out of that for sure.
And once you break into something like that, when you can get someone with a community that is not your community, I mean, maybe you hang out with wealthy people all the time. I don't know. But once you get, you know, a connection in a community like that, those people, if they're happy with what you did, they will tell the other people that they know in their community. Mm-hmm. And that's the best kind of connection to have, is like personal experience and recommendation to somebody else. And yeah, that could turn into legit like commission that the cost is worth it rather than the work or the, you know, making a video out of it or whatever. It could turn into a lot more. That's great. Very cool. Awesome. Well, I think with like the proactive stuff on my end, I've been trying to just come up with like alternatives, and the three of us have talked about some of this stuff offline about, you know, what the future alternatives are to making money from sponsorship. And it's still for us, a lot of it is the online learning stuff and, products and the digital products. I think physical products is still kind of there, but it's just like a whole set of problems. It's a whole set of figuring out the thing and how to manufacture the thing. And, you know, I'm not sure that that's the solution for me, but I'm still proactively exploring those things and trying to look at Yeah, it's really hard to talk in generalities about this stuff, but but I think my proactive actions now around the future and around YouTube and advertising stuff is just trying to set up other things so that I'm not as reliant on the seasonality and the economy and stuff of the kind of creator thing. It's just, it's unstable. Oh, just like my AirPod that popped up. Yeah.
We talked about this online. I can't give details yet, but you know, we are also working on, when I say we, Kelly and I are working on things to stabilize that income and to have like an exit plan is not the right term, but it's kind of like how I'm thinking, because this isn't going to last forever.
Yeah.
You know, maybe I wanted to. I love making videos more than anything. I just wish it was a little bit less emotional and more steady.
The way I've looked at that is not about exit plan as much for me. It's not about exit plan as much as the video end of things not being the primary source of income. And if it's not the primary source of income, then that takes a huge amount of pressure off of it to be anything other than what it is. You know what I mean? Having to impress brands, not having to seek out reasons or justifications for, I want to make this big dumb thing that I'm making right now. How do I prove that it's worthwhile? I don't really want to do that. I just want to make the big dumb thing.
Yeah.
And if I have the income set up in other places, then that freedom is like, yeah, I can make anything I want. And it doesn't matter if it performs.
Have to have a hook. You're not bowing down to an algorithm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've been trying to avoid the hook for this past year and just making the things that I want to make. But man, sometimes you just have to pay the bills. You have to make a bed out of toothpicks. You know, you got to have that stupid hook. And I don't want to do that.
Yeah. I mean, so this big dumb thing that I'm talking about, it's really, its only purpose is for me to learn how to work with foam and to learn how to do fiberglass.
To push yourself.
To push myself. It's to learn new skills. And I have no normal justification for learning those two things. I have no other reason for putting them in place. So the hook was, let's make a big dumb thing that happens to be made out of foam and fiberglass so that I can learn those things, you know? And it's, unfortunately, that's just the nature of how YouTube is now. To get the bare minimum amount of attention from people, there has to be that some sort of a hook or some sort of a, even if that hook is legit and honest and, you know, I'm not saying hook from like a fake somebody out kind of way, but it can be a legitimate hook and this is something new for me or this was really hard, and those things can be truthful but still a hook. So that's the way I'm going about those things, and I'm with you. Like, I try not to create a hook, otherwise I just try to make the thing I want to make and then figure out the best way with what I've got, how do I get people interested in it. And that honestly doesn't work most of the time, but that's why being proactive in the other areas, I think, is becoming more and more important, at least for me. So that I can have videos that bomb on a regular basis and it won't bother me. It won't affect my future and it won't affect my present, you know? Yeah, that's where I'm with it.
And the thing is, I think a lot of the people that listen to this podcast are like, oh, I watch every one of your videos. Of course I watch all your videos, but that's only the returning viewer is only a percentage of the total viewership of each video. I am so thankful for those returning viewers, whatever that is, like 50, 60%. I don't know what the actual number is, but a good 40% of that is new viewers. And how do you get those new viewers to like you or to like the project so they can watch the next video?
Yeah.
So I thank the people listening to this podcast because they're the true hardcore fans.
Absolutely. And like we talked about last time, like the huge percentage of the people are also people who support the show through Patreon. And that's like a double whammy of care to me because we know that the people listening care about what we do here from the from the Patreon support. We also know that we see so much crossover in the comments and stuff. We know that people watch our videos and listen to this. And those people that you're talking about are necessary. And I'm very grateful for them. And it's difficult at this day to increase that number of people who are willing to stick around or come back and watch most everything, because there's so much to watch. There's so many other things to do. There's so many different platforms to be on and stuff like that. So, you know, it's harder these days to get that kind of attention to grow in that same way. And that's why I think it's important to have other things going on. I was on a podcast a couple weeks ago, another Woodshop podcast, and it was a really good conversation. We had a good time. One of the things that we talked about was like, what would you tell somebody starting now, or what would you tell yourself? I can't remember exactly how it was. It was like, what would you say to somebody who was starting YouTube now? And it was really kind of like, it sounded negative, and I kind of hate that it sounded negative, but I was trying to say, the three of us at least, came in at a really, really amazing time to YouTube, because we could do whatever we wanted to for a really long time, and it was easy to do. Somebody coming in now, it's a different landscape. It's a different, I don't know, it's a different kind of output that has to be created, and it's just different. Because the audience is different, the platform is different, and all that stuff. But I think without our long-term, having that long-term experience with people just coming back because they were cool and wanted to support what we were doing, I think it would be much harder to do what we do now if we were just starting it now, because it would be harder to find those people. And I feel for the people who are starting social media influencer type content creation stuff now, because it's just harder to find your people. I
think the metaphor that's coming to mind as you talk is like a trickling creek. Like you're going for like a light little swim in a trickling creek. That's how it was when we started, and now it's like a raging river.
Yeah, for real.
Yeah. And the raging river is just full of high end output and more and more audience members. And everyone's competing for eyeballs, and you know, if you're happy with the audience you have, then you're okay. But if you're looking for millions of views, then it's going to be tough.
It's going to be tough, but it's still fun. It's the funnest thing I do, and it's all I think about every day.
Yeah,
maybe too much.
The most successful venture that I've ever attempted.
Yeah,
I think I think. It's more fun, and this is to the people who might be thinking about starting, or kind of in response to that question that I got the other day. I think it will be more fun if you don't have to rely on it so much. And I think that's how I'm looking at this whole like other sources of income thing. I think the video stuff is more fun if there's less pressure to it. And so other things coming in to fill the financial gaps make it more fun, even though I guess it's more work. So that's a recommendation to me, or to me, but from me to other people, in case you're wanting to get into this. Any other thoughts on this stuff?
Anything? I think we're good.
Just be proactive through, you know, reaching out to sponsors or finding other ways to make money or finding collaborations. Or, I mean, I think you can't expect everything to come to you. I think that's less often, but it's amazing when it happens.
More output, the more input. That's what I always say.
Yeah.
The more you output, the more you'll get input. And then you won't know exactly how some of those things connect. It has a lot to do with just kicking up the energy and moving stuff around and not hiding under a rock.
Yeah. My advice to myself is just to be more open to possibilities and not stuck in your ways of doing the same thing for 10 years.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Well, I'm going to thank our Patreon supporters. We have a new supporter this week, Making with Mog. Thank you, Making with Mog, which
How's
is
Mog spelled
of M, big M, small O, big G, because it stands for Makerspace of Greenville. Wait, did I say that right? I think it's Greenville. I'm going to verify that. Greenville. Yes, Makerspace of Greenville. They're in our new top supporters section. So I wanted to call them out and say thank you for joining up there and for supporting the show. Also, a big thanks to Pete Rondeau, A Pretty Big Deal, Inc., Matthias Garnow, Michael Menegin, Warren Works, The New Janky Workshop, Scott at Dad It Yourself DIY, Odin Leather Goods, Rich at Low End Design, Chad from Mancrafting, Works by Solo, Albers Woodworks, Corey Ward, and Nick Ryan. But also people like, oh, I didn't pull the list up. I forgot to pull the list up of other people pulling list up, stalling. Other people like Steve Yop. Thanks, Steve.
Thank you, everybody.
Steve actually just joined up last month as well. Steve, glad to have you. Everybody over there at every level gets the after show, which is where we usually talk about secret stuff. We say the proper nouns that we don't say in the main show sometimes. So if you want to learn the details of things that we don't talk about here, you can go to patreon.com/makingit, join up, support the show, and then you get more after show. Another podcast. And a lot of those people on that list, the people, the names I read, I know I've heard from at least a handful of them that are coming to the 500 event in Boston on September 6th. Anybody else that's coming, if you're a Patreon supporter, let us know. Love to hear from you.
And please.
Can't wait to see you all. I have a really good recommendation this week from a Patreon supporter. I'm going to let you all go first because this is a good one. So,
all right,
tell me, and I withheld it from you so that I could use it as my recommendation. All right, you guys tell me what you got this week.
Well, I was going to go with, I sent it to you guys, Elephant Graveyard. He's pretty genius, and he did a video called How Comedy Was Destroyed. Let me see, I'm going to pull it up only just to get the full title. How Comedy Was Destroyed by an Anti-Reality Doomsday Cult. He does not like Joe Rogan, this guy. He's just a few comedians he believes are ruining comedy. And he goes into this very esoteric deep dive theory on how things got to the way they are. And there's been a big push, and I kind of agree with it. Every time you go to put on a comedy podcast, there's like a politician, and these comedians pick one side or the other, and typically all one side. And they have these politicians on. It's like, you're supposed to be like, I want to go to comedy to get away from that. And so in the last election cycle, all these comedians have politicians on because it's for them, it's a big get, because they could say, oh, I had JD Vance, or I had this. And then all of a sudden, that's what their podcast is about. It's not about comedy anymore. And if they try and go back to it, it's like, how can you take them serious when you know that they're all slanted? Anyway, that's what this is about. Check out the Elephant Graveyard. It's a pretty genius channel. I've talked about it before.
Mine is, I am fairly certain I've recommended this YouTube channel before. It's called Bob and Brad, and it's basically they have an amazing little jingle. Bob and Brad, the two most famous physical therapists on the internet. Amazing little jingle. I've watched their YouTube channel for years when Cameron Dan sent me this. If you're older like me, it's an amazing YouTube channel. Last Wednesday, Bob passed away, and he had what's called ataxia, and I don't really know much about that, but he has stepped away from the public facing of Bob and Brad a year or two ago, and there's another guy that fills in. Still an amazing channel. They still put out amazing content, but it is really sad to see somebody you've been watching for so many years pass away, because it's like, I've never met Bob, but you watch somebody for years and seen hundreds of their videos, it almost feels like you know them. So Bob and Brad.
Cool. Check them out. I don't remember you recommending that. I feel like it would have stuck out.
For somebody your age, it's great.
Yeah. And somebody named Bob.
And somebody named Bob.
So, okay. This is funny. A minute ago, I just randomly pulled the list of Patreon supporters, and I looked down and I saw Steve Yop, and I said, hey, thanks, Steve, you're new, right? You heard me say that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went to my email and I was like, oh, I got to figure out which supporter it was that sent me that really good recommendation that I wanted to tell everybody. So I go search for it. It was Steve Yop. That's crazy. And that's a legit random coincidence. I did not mean to do that. But Steve sent this recommendation, especially for Bob and Dave, is what he said. And I withheld it from you because I knew that you would love it. And I wanted to I did not forward the email to you because I wanted it as a recommendation. This channel is called Super Ordinary. Have you heard this?
No.
Awesome. It's so good. And it's this graphic designer guy who I've only watched the welcome video or like the hello world and then his first sandwich video.
Okay.
But I guarantee you I will like the other ones because they look even more interesting than the sandwich one. They're beautifully made. They're really clever. They're kind of funny. It's basically him trying to make ordinary life interesting. And okay. Yeah. Go watch this guy.
The thumbnails
are beautiful.
I watched
one video. I got halfway through the sandwich video and was like, oh man, I'm in on this. Like,
okay.
This is
I'm
good
excited.
Stuff. Yeah. No, thank you, Steve, for that recommendation. I appreciate it. It was funny because as soon as I started watching it, I'm like, yeah, there's no way I'm forwarding this to David. It's going to be my recommendation.
I don't want him stealing my pick.
Yeah. Cool. Well, you guys got anything else for this week?
That's it. We'll see everybody in a couple of weeks, right?
In a couple of weeks.
We'll have one more episode before?
I don't know. Something? I don't know.
I don't know how calendars work.
We will have two more episodes, yeah, before.
I just wanted to clear something up. A couple people keep sending me messages that someone's knocking me off on Facebook, and it's my channel. Vu started a new Jimmy DeResta channel because they were having some community issues with my, I have a Facebook account that has over 1 million followers that was started by, what was that other company called? Bobble Bush. What was that other company that we all used to use?
Jelly Smack.
Jelly Smack. Yeah. So Bobble Bush. Bobble Bush had it started a channel that got millions of views. Then Vuv took it over. And then Vuv said, I'm having some issues with some community guidelines because of like weaponry and stuff. And so they just, to avoid any of that, they just started a whole new one. So they're building a whole new one, which has already got, I think, 100,000+. So there are like 3 or 4 Jimmy DeResta Facebook pages that have videos, and they're all mine. So,
My Facebook is currently demonetized, and we can't figure out. I also work with Vuv, and we can't figure out where the demonetization is coming from. And I can't say that word, but yeah.
Yeah, so that's why they started a new one. So anyway, and they've been really aggressive. Every time I open Facebook, I'm like, oh, what is this guy making? I'm like, oh, that's cool. Oh, that's me.
He's got one of my hats on. Wait a minute.
and it's funny, even though they take a 10-minute video and make it like 8 seconds long, I'm like still like kind of like, wait, what did I do? Why did I do that?
Yeah, I totally the videos watched from my last old 10 years. So funny. I'm like, wow, I forgot how I did that. That's
yeah, I'm like, well, how am I going to do? Now what am I going to do? How am I going to solve that? Oh, that's cool. Every time I watch it. So anyway, that's it. Thank you.
Funny.
You cool. know, real You know what? I'll save it for the after show. We're done here.
Oh,
we're done here.
We're done here.
Yeah, we're done here.
All right, cool. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Love you. Bye, guys.